Derg and the Foulmire, located Cairn Barrow, the largest village of the region. With a fingertip on the spot where he'd shot Pendergast, he examined the surrounding area closely. The nearest village was Inverkirkton, about 3 miles from the shooting site. Besides Kilchurn Lodge, no other habitation was closer. If Pendergast had survived, if he'd gone anywhere, it would have been Inverkirkton. That's where he would start. Esterhazy folded up the map and glanced down the far side of the hill. From his vantage spot, he could just make out Inverkirkton. He cleared his throat, got back on the bicycle. A moment later, he was coasting eastward down the hill, the afternoon sun on his back, taking no notice of the sweet smell of heather drifting in the air. Inverkirkton was a clustering of well-tended buildings at a bend in the road, but it had the two things every Scottish settlement seemed to have, a pub and an inn. He wheeled up to the inn, climbed off the bike, leaned it against the whitewashed stone. Then, plucking a handkerchief from his pocket, he stepped inside. The small lobby was cheerfully decorated with framed photos of Inverness and the Mull of Kintyre, beside tartans and a local map. It was empty save for a man in his early 60s, evidently the innkeeper, who was standing behind a counter of polished wood, reading a newspaper. He glanced up as Esterhazy stepped in, his bright blue eyes inquisitive. Esterhazy made a show of mopping his face with the handkerchief and blowing hard. Word of the shooting would have been news in this tiny local hamlet, and Esterhazy was relieved that there was no sign of recognition in the man's gaze.
"Good afternoon to you," the man said with a deep burr.
"Afternoon," Esterhazy replied, after seeming to recover some of his breath. The innkeeper glanced over Esterhazy's shoulder where the front wheel of the bicycle was just visible through the door.
"On holiday, are we?"
Esterhazy nodded.
"I'd like a room, if one's available."
"Aye, one is. What might your name be, sir?"
"Edmund Draper." He took another series of shuddering breaths, wiped his face again with the handkerchief. The innkeeper hefted down a large ledger from a shelf behind him.
"You seem a bit fagged, laddie."
Esterhazy nodded again.
"Cycled here from Fraserburgh."
The innkeeper stopped in the act of opening the ledger.
"Fraserburgh?
But that's close to 40 miles, a good bit of it over mountains."
"I know. I found that out the hard way. It's only my second day of vacation, and I guess I overdid it. That's the way I am." The innkeeper shook his head.
"Well, all I can say is that you'll sleep well tonight. You'd best take it easy tomorrow."
"I don't think I'll have a choice." Another pause for breath. "By the way, I saw the pub next door. I assume it serves dinner?"
"Aye, and a fine one. And if you don't mind, I'd like to suggest a local malt, Glen—"
The man stopped talking. Esterhazy's face had assumed a worried, pained expression.
"Is anything the matter?" the innkeeper asked.
"I don't know," Esterhazy replied. He allowed his voice to become strained. "I've got this sudden pressure, pain in my chest." A look of concern crossed the other man's face. Bustling out from behind the counter, he led Esterhazy to a small adjoining parlor and eased him into an overstuffed chair.
"It's shooting down my arm now. Oh, God, it hurts."
Esterhazy gritted his teeth, clutched at his chest with his right hand.
"Would you like me to get you a drink, then?"
the innkeeper said, bending over him solicitously.
"No, call for a doctor, quickly."
And then, slumping over, Esterhazy closed his eyes.
Chapter 12. New York City. The drive leading up to the porte cochere of 891 Riverside Drive looked a lot better than the first time DeGusta had seen it. Back then, it had been filled with drifting trash, the surrounding ailanthus and sumac bushes dead or dying. The Beaux-Art mansion itself had been shuttered and covered with gang graffiti.
Now the property was clean and orderly, the four-story stone structure completely restored, its mansard roof, towers, and widow's walk returned to period condition. And yet,
As DeGusta stared at it from the carriageway, there was something cold and strangely empty about the place. He wasn't sure why he was here, exactly. More than once he'd told himself to stop being paranoid, to stop acting like an old woman. But something about the visit from Corey Swanson had stuck with him, and this time, when the impulse to stop by Pendergast Mansion had risen yet again, he'd decided to act on it. He stood for a minute, catching his breath. He'd taken the number one train to 137th Street and walked toward the river, but even that short journey had winded him. He hated this long convalescence, hated how the gunshot wound, the pig valve replacement, the subsequent gradual recovery had sapped him of strength. The only good thing about it was that he'd initially lost weight, but now he was gaining it back in spades, and unable, for the time being, to exercise it off. After a few moments, he walked down the carriageway and stepped up to the oaken front door. He seized the brass knocker, gave it a stout rap. Silence. He waited a minute, then two. Nothing. He leaned in toward the door, listening, but the house was too well built for any sound to escape. He knocked a second time. What with Constance Green in an asylum, maybe the place really was as deserted as it looked. But that made no sense. He knew Pendergast employed help both here and at the Dakota. There was a whisper of a key turning in well-oiled tumblers, then the massive door slowly opened. The entranceway was dimly lit, but DeGusta could make out the features of Proctor, Pendergast's chauffeur and sometime butler. Normally expressionless and imperturbable, today Proctor looked dour, almost forbidding.
"Mr. DeGusta, sir," he said, "won't you please come in?"
DeGusta stepped inside, and Proctor carefully locked the door behind him.
"Would you care to step into the library?" the man asked.
DeGusta had the creepy sensation he had been expected. He followed Proctor down the long, echoing gallery and into the reception hall, its dome of wedgewood blue soaring overhead, the dim light illuminating the dozens of rippled glass display cases and their curious contents.
"Is Pendergast in?" he asked.
Proctor paused and turned back.
"I am very sorry to say he is not, sir."
"Where is he?" The chauffeur's cold look only wavered slightly.
"He's dead, sir."
DeGusta felt the room reel.
"Dead? How?"
He was on 100.